WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Big city life, with its rats, muggings, garbage, and pollution, can seem like a horror movie. Journalist William Geist can turn it into a comedy. From 1983 to 87, he wrote the popular About New York column in the New York Times. He left the Times to bring his quirky takes on city life to CBS Sunday Morning. He's collected some of his Times columns in a new book titled City Slickers. In the introduction to the book, Geist explains why he stuck out at the Times.
The trouble with working at the New York Times is that people at parties are always trying to pin you down on Botswana. When I was working there, I always had to explain to them that I was writing about people who lived in trees in Central Park, sold bullwhips on street corners, hit chip shots out of abandoned cars on New York City golf courses, that type of thing. By choice, actually. I suspect New York is as different from mainland America as Botswana. For the longest time after moving here from the Midwest, I thought everybody in New York was just running a fever, some sort of tsetse fly deal. Here in the nation's thyroid, people scurry about at a frenzied pace. Drivers routinely run red lights, people walk and talk too fast, and many of them eat lunch walking. They eat peculiar things, too. Gnishes, kasha varnishkas, fried kreplach. Stuff that might not even be food, I don't know. On a single day, which was not April Fool's Day, by the way, in New York, I discovered a trendy hair salon giving lion urine hair treatments. A man selling Bob's Lucky Potatoes on Wall Street, and investors buying them for luck, too. 150 retro runners competing in a backward mile race to bring attention to their new and apparently serious sport, and a man introducing a line of dog hair clothing.
Gosh, what a job you have. My favorite quote from one of the people who you spoke with in the book is from a cabbie who said, "I have always considered courtesy a sign of weakness." And I think that really sums up a certain kind of New York mentality.
It definitely does. And there again, I think I got more letters, I think, when I was writing the About New York column from people outside New York than I did from New York itself. People out in the in what I call mainland America, which is where I'm from, really appreciate that kind of quote.
How do you get ideas? Do people call you up with suggestions?
Not often enough, unfortunately. I do a lot of, kind of going through newspapers and all sorts of little publications in New York looking for ideas and trying to stumble across people or places that will really say something about New York.
I bet a lot of people misinterpret what it is that you do and bring you some really stupid ideas.
Yes.
What are some examples?
Well, for one thing, I mean, I'm just bombarded by public relations agencies who call up and you say, you know, that might be representing a chief executive officer of some corporation saying, you know, our CEO plays chess or croquet on the weekends. Don't you think that would be an interesting story for you to do? And sometimes you can reverse that and kind of make fun of them in the process. And sometimes I will do stories like that.
The first major daily that you worked at was the Chicago Tribune. What was your ambition when you joined the staff there?
To hold my job. I mean, I really wasn't sure that I could do it. And then later it became to keep my sanity because they kind of put me out in the suburbs covering library board meetings and sewer bond referendums, things like that. And after a while, you're, again, and like living in New York, you're kind of forced to develop a sense of humor about it or go crazy.
Did that feel like living in exile covering the suburbs?
Very much so. They would always, we were out in the suburban bureau of the Chicago Tribune, and whenever anything, let's say a 747 would crash out at O'Hare, they would send out the real reporters and tell us it was fine for us to go about. Somebody had to cover the library board meeting, and so they'd send us along to that.
How did you start covering stories about pink flamingos on lawns and the alarming shortage of leisure suits and other polyester fashions?
Well, there again, that was a few years ago back in the suburbs of Chicago and kind of looking for things that that I could write about and bring some humor to and so on to kind of break out of that meeting the public official syndrome.
Now, you were writing about suburban life. And I think you really wanted to make the point that the suburbs don't conform to the stereotypes that many people have of the suburbs.
I think that's true, yeah. And the same is true, I think, of New York, that it's not, that's a lot of the, I guess, as with New York and the suburbs, I mean, there's so much there that, yes, there are stereotypes are there, but there are all sorts of other things, too.
When you got your job at the New York Times to cover odd things happening in the city, was it difficult for you to orient yourself to Manhattan?
Well, yes, because it was kind of a sensory overload after being out in the suburbs for so long, kind of driving around looking for little things, anything that was different. And here in New York, everything was different. And it was kind of, where do you start? I mean, there were more stories on one city block in New York than there were in mile upon mile of suburban Chicago.
Well, you were also seeing Manhattan from the eyes of an outsider, and probably a lot of things that struck you as totally bizarre seemed perfectly normal to native New Yorkers.
Well, that's true, and that I suppose it can be a problem. They called it at the paper a complete lack of knowledge about New York was identified as a fresh eye and made to be a positive thing. And so the real challenge, yes, was to write it, was to not see something that was just part of everyday life and write about it as if it were something new. Although, in some ways, that was good, too, because in New York, some of the things that are right in front of people's noses, they don't really notice or pay attention to or think about.
Such as?
Just about everything, whether it's something sad, people lying on the streets in front of them to make them actually see these people, or whether it's sitting at sidewalk cafes, the ridiculousness of sitting at a sidewalk cafe with buses going by and bus fumes and people hitting potholes and splashing them as they're trying to be cavalier and sit at a sidewalk cafe.
Did you have to change your style to suit the New York Times style book?
I think any editor at the Times would tell you I never quite fit the New York Times style book, and it was kind of a perpetual give and take and trying to meet in the middle someplace. I mean, they did like the fact that I wrote differently than some of the other people at the Times, but at the same time, they didn't like some of that. So I was generally regarded as a person who got by with more than any other reporter at the Times in terms of style differences. But I also think I had more things taken out than anybody else. In other words, I loaded up the stories, wrote them in my own style, and then they kind of came out somewhere in the middle.
You recently left the New York Times to work for CBS Sunday Morning. How would you compare the kinds of stories you're doing for television with the stories that you covered for the newspaper?
Well, I'm actually trying to do the same kinds of things. They don't always come out that way. It's a whole different experience. At the Times, you know, you just put a notebook in your pocket and go out and spend the time and come back and type up the story. And, of course, there were some changes made by editors for style reasons. But now it's working with a producer and editors and sometimes several producers up the line before the thing actually gets on the air. And so sometimes they get on to my own satisfaction and sometimes they don't. I mean, it's just a difficult learning process. I'd never done any television at all.
CBS Sunday Morning always ends with scenes of nature, with a waterfall or wild geese or a beautiful country landscape. Do you see yourself as doing the urban equivalent?
Well, that's funny. I did a piece, did one piece for the Sunday Morning program that was the same as a column that I'd done, which was on the new trend of walking. There's a walking store in New York where you can go buy walking shoes or walking outfits. It costs like $200. And while we were out in Central Park taping people walking for this television show, we saw a rat run under a bench. And I had the camera crew just kind of do the rat running under the bench as sort of an urban equivalent of Charles Kuralt's nature endings, which was something we showed them there, but they chose not to use.
Yeah, I could see why.
A little disgusting on a Sunday morning with a hangover eating bacon and eggs.
Thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thanks, Terry.
Journalist William Geist, his new book, City Slickers, is published by Times Books. He spoke to us from the NPR Bureau in New York.